Today's gospel, on the face of it, is troubling. While at a back from the dead party for her brother, Lazarus, Mary anoints Jesus' feet with a very expensive perfume and her tears. Judas expresses what everyone else is thinking. Her act is inappropriately extravagant. It would be like taking Mother Teresa an $800 bottle of wine. Then we are caught off guard by Jesus' seeming callous response, telling us, "You will have the poor with you always, but not me." While I can appreciate John's literary genius of using the story to foreshadow Jesus' washing of his disciples' feet and Mary Magdalene's failed attempt to anoint his body after his death, over the years, I have struggled to make sense of how someone who identified with the marginalized could sound so indifferent to their needs. A passage in a book I count in my top 100, To Kill a Mockingbird, offers some insights into what I think Jesus was getting at. This book tells of widower Atticus Finch, who is raising his young son and daughter amid the racism and classism of Depression-era Alabama. Jim and Scout face the taunting neighbors and the taunting of school peers when Atticus agrees to defend a black man accused of raping a white woman. Mrs. DeBose, an elderly neighbor, sits on her front porch and torments the children with comments as they walk home from school. One day, Jim can't take it anymore. He takes his revenge by grabbing a baton and bashing all of Mrs. DeBose's prized camellias. Atticus punishes the children by having them go to her home and read aloud to her for 2 hours every afternoon for a month. Scout remembers, an oppressive odor met us when we crossed the threshold, an odor I had met many times in rain-rotted gray houses. It always made me afraid, expectant, watchful. Each afternoon, they read while Mrs. DeBose sleeps and drools until an alarm clock rings, and then the children run outside to breathe fresh air. Finally, the month is up, and not long afterwards, Mrs. DeBose dies. The children are surprised when Atticus tells them that she was addicted to morphine and that their reading sessions helped her to wean herself so she could die in freedom. He says, "I wanted you to see what real courage is. It's when you know you're licked before you begin, but you begin anyway, and you see it through no matter what. You rarely win, but sometimes you do." Incredible words. They'd be all the more incredible if I could say them like Gregory Peck does in the movie. But they still bear repeating. I want you to listen one more time. "I wanted you to see what courage is. It's when you know you're licked before you begin, but you begin anyway, and you see it through no matter what. You rarely win, but sometimes you do." Jesus couldn't have said it better. While Atticus's explicit lesson was about courage, he was teaching his children an essential life skill. He was teaching them empathy, how to see the world from the perspective of another by being fully present to them, and how losing ourselves in another even those we might find disagreeable, can make all the difference. Empathy is a hot topic these days, especially in America, where Obama made it, brought it to the forefront when he suggested a Supreme Court justice should have the quality of empathy. The Republicans made great fun of it. But ever since, neuroscientists, educators, psychologists, and even a few theologians are exploring its importance to humanity. It used to be thought that empathy is what makes us human. But Franz de Waal, who has spent a lifetime studying primates, has published a book recently entitled The Age of Empathy: Nature's Lessons for a Kinder Society. Referring to numerous animal behavioral studies, he makes the case that from lab rats to chimpanzees to elephants, they all show a capacity for empathy. Neuroscientists have even identified the part of the brain where our empathy is hardwired, where it resides. But even though the capacity to empathize is there, we still have to learn to use it over a lifetime. It's kind of like with your computer. You know, it can do a lot of things that you don't even know about yet. You have to learn it's there before you can use it. Empathy is often misunderstood and confused for other things. So it might be easier to explain by explaining what it is not. Empathy is not the same as love. If love is the giving from our heart without expectation, empathy is a quality of being fully present to another person, focusing on the other, which often opens our hearts to such giving. Love is abstract without empathy. Empathy brings love to action. Empathy is not sympathy. Sympathy requires agreement with the other person's point of view. Empathy means we fully let in what the other expresses without agreeing or disagreeing. Empathy implies seeking to understand, not seeking agreement or disagreement. Empathy leads to unity. Sympathy divides us. Empathy is not being nice, but it is being kind. If by being nice we mean polite, proper behavior, empathy can often be the opposite of niceness. Empathy calls for our authenticity and honesty. Empathy acknowledges what is often kept hidden by the polite, nice world, bringing those uncomfortable issues to the forefront. Being nice can hide the seamier side of life. Empathy breaks through denial and tells it the way it is. It is kinder to tell someone they have body odor than let them continue to offend unaware. Empathy is not passivity. Being empathetic does not mean becoming a doormat without needs and expression, or indifferent to conflict. Empathy is an active process of presence, listening, observing, and intentionally opening to someone other than ourselves. In fact, empathy moves us to the center of conflict. Human beings are always going to disagree, misunderstand, react, and so forth. Our world and our own lives are full of examples of this. Empathy works directly with this truth. By deeply understanding, one another, we can reduce misunderstanding, see clearly how our views differ, and build trust through the truly courageous act of letting another human being fully into our awareness and maybe even our hearts. It doesn't mean we agree or disagree, sympathize, lie down, or be polite. We simply give another the gift of our presence and understanding. So empathy isn't naive. Empathy is exactly the opposite of naivete. Empathy ends naivete. How? Because when we fully receive another person, seek to understand, the maximum amount of information is brought into the open. This doesn't mean everything is rosy and we stand around holding hands singing kumbaya. It means we are aware of another's needs, giving us the maximum opportunity to act on accurate information and the deepest level of trust. What we have done is relieve ourselves of the naive idea that some problems are unsolvable, that violent disagreement is absolutely inevitable. But before you get ideas that expressing empathy is particularly noble, empathy isn't selfless. It is the meeting ground where the needs of all are acknowledged and understood. Although empathy may seem like it is a selfless act, it is not. When I deeply understand another, it has been my experience, time and again, that having been heard, the person is now far more open to hearing and understanding me. Empathy gives me a much greater chance of bringing my own needs and values to actuality. So scientists say we're hardwired to be empathetic. Clearly, being empathetic benefits us personally. Thanks to global communications and commerce, what were once exotic cultures are now available to us to understand within a few keystrokes. For instance, this week, Glenn was blown away by a Pakistani he met who complimented the billboard, telling him that thanks to the internet, it was the talk of the town when he was home for Christmas. At staff meeting this week, Glenn marveled that our billboard was being discussed over dinner tables in Karachi. Such a bridge crosses cultures for greater understanding and is still quite a new but wonderful phenomenon. Yet in spite of the pluses of being empathetic and an environment increasingly conducive to it, polarization seems still to be the rule. Israel, continuing their provocative housing projects on the West Bank. Republicans opposing anything and everything Obama does. Christian opposition to atheists having freedom of speech. Anglicans, I know this gets boring, threatening schism again over American Anglicans approving the consecration of Mary Glasspool, a lesbian, as bishop. Or a colleague in the diocese sending me photos of Muslim fundamentalists protesting with hateful signs in response to our respectful attitude towards those of other faiths. Yes, we may have the hardware for empathy, but we need new software to run it. We still tend to see those that oppose us as the enemy, to see their humanity, to know they are pretty much like us, still seems naive. To protect our own self-interests, we must set ourselves apart, we think. This may be the dominant view of reality, but it is still a false one. Today's gospel is the antidote. Empathy is on full display. Mary's anointing of Jesus' feet seems extravagant to Judas and perhaps to others in attendance, but Jesus accepts it as an act of empathy on her part. She understands that Jesus' ministry is reaching its climax and that he expects to pay the ultimate price for being the personification of God's love. the anointing with expensive perfume is her recognition of the value of his life. The anointing with tears is recognition of his courage to carry on, even though it seems he's licked. To wipe his feet with her hair is to make herself one with his mission, even unto death. His commitment to the poor and the marginalized will live on in Mary. Because he knows the poor will be with us always, those who care about them need to be with us always as well. How? By recognizing the love Jesus embodies is within each of us. By recognizing ourselves within him, his love for the poor, the oppressed, the sick, the marginalized lives on. Like Jim and Scout with Mrs. DuBose, spending time with Jesus will teach us that the stink of death, the odor of oppression, and the reek of injustice does not have to defeat us. Spending time with Jesus will give us the courage to anoint the afflicted with the perfume of love, acknowledging that we are one with them. It may not always make the world a kinder place, a more loving place, but sometimes it will.